Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan, and I have John joining me for another victory episode. Another big game this week as well. A little dual action. We have a preview along with, I guess, the recap of Michigan. John, where do you want to start?
I mean, we only played 230 games on CBS. That is the Illini under Brett Bielema. It's the new standard. CBS was like, listen, SEC, we love you. We love you. We want to have you. But you know what? We just can't continue on with this contract. We're gonna leave the SEC and we're gonna go to the Big Ten so that we can put Illinois on our primetime 230 slot every single week.
And when we go to the game, we can't even appreciate it, but the rewatch, it still hits.
Oh yeah. It was so cool. Yeah. The fact that we were there, we didn't get to obviously see all the pageantry and whatnot, but the fact that they did like the lead in with the old timey radio call and the grainy footage and everyone getting dressed up. It was a sweet homage. And it's kind of like, this will probably be a theme throughout the episode, but it's sweet that it kind of got paid off. Like when people are thinking about that game, they're not just thinking of like, oh, this silly little gimmick of people getting dressed up to watch Illinois lose to the defending national champs. It's like, no, they did that. But then like it came out and it was also a great game for the team that had all the smoke and pageantry.
There's so many cameras with that broadcast too. I feel like there were 100 angles of every play, which I love, especially when rewatching things.
There wasn't a blimp, but there were a couple biplanes, and I was convinced Connor Stallions was in one of them, just taking little signals and notes and relaying it to Sharon Moore. Obviously didn't end up helping out, but yeah, it was funny because I was hoping we get a Goodyear blimp sighting in Champaign, but I guess all we got were some FA-18s.
That would have been good. Stallions has been saying he's been going to every game, sitting in a crowd. I didn't see him, but you never really know with Connor Stallions where that man is.
Connor Stallions. Yeah.
But to your point, I saw we had the cards up on the sideline, but if you know Brett Bielema, you know he was highly aware of potential sign stealing and probably disguised his signs as best he could for this one.
It is a fun new wrinkle with like the in helmet communication that you can still throw up like dummy signals or even your actual signals and teams won't know because of the in helmet communication. So it's something that I'm sure Bielema loves as an attention to details guy or as like an advantage looker for. That's something that he obviously would love to just be like, oh, we can put up these cards. Like we don't have to, but we can do it to dissuade the Connor Stallions of the world. But that's not why you called. You called because it was a beautiful day. Perfect. Just everything was going for the Illini.
You talked about the in-helmet communication and they talked about it after the game. TJ McMillan on punts has the in-helmet communication, which was a massive factor in that game. We were up 13-7 at the time that Brett decided to put his cojones on the table and roll the dice on in his own territory. I think he played it perfectly. It was a fourth and long. So if it's fourth and three, they're probably sitting in punt safe, but because it's a little bit longer, they're in their normal, punt return formation. And they must've seen something on film and looking at it that Michigan overloads one side. And if you watch the replay, you see TJ McMillan actually say something to the left side of the punt formation. And I assume he basically gave them the green light, whatever their code word was, that the fake is on. And next thing you know, Tanner Arkin's running 30 yards downfield with Lane Hansen shot out of a cannon, lead blocking, even though I don't think he really touched anyone, but still looked good.
Yeah, he got on the highlight, and he'll always have that. I saw someone on Twitter say that he was running like the track athlete who runs his Red Grange for the Jimmy Johns. He kind of has the same gait. So I guess that's not the worst thing because that kid's fast as all get.
How about Hugh Robertson too? The sell job of all sell jobs.
So it's funny because watching football in person is so different than on TV because I think, I consider myself, and I'm sure you do too, but like I consider myself an elite ball watcher. Like I know I can like kind of see things a split second before they're going to happen. Just knowing the feel, because we're there at the game and your sight lines are not necessarily limited, but you have to like pick out a couple more things. Cause it's not just on a nice, 60 inch TV that you can kind of consume all of it. I'm looking at Hugh Robertson and the moment that I see him put on a great acting job, I'm just like, oh, like, are you kidding? Like I was like hoping, like, man, he's gonna have to make like some kind of athletic play because he's already reaching. And then all of a sudden, you see Tanner Arkin just like untouched going down the middle of the field, and then you're thinking touchdown, and you're like, wow, this is unbelievable. Honestly, it's the perfect, because knowing that Brett Bielema is like a trick plays kind of guy, you know, he's always had those going back to Arkansas and Wisconsin. He's always got a little something up his sleeve, you know, the barge package. So it's like part of his personality, but I love that he kind of just like waits for it. You know, I think they talked about potentially deploying against Penn State, but keeping their powder dry. And this was just the perfect, like, to your point, it was perfect. You know, you're at midfield, so you're not, you know, it's not killer doing it. And it's also, you know, not crazy, but it's still unexpected. And I saw Urban Meyer and Jerry DiNardo doing a couple minutes on it. And it was really cool seeing them break it down, just talking about how, yeah, you know, they only had three guys to the side, the Illini sideline side. And it's just as simple, like, you know, hat on a hat and, you know, get some lead blockers. And if you surprise them the right way with a good fake with Hugh, you know, acting like the snap was bad, you get them just to pause even. And they came up the field as well. It's like just perfect execution. Absolutely the turning point in the game. That's when you knew it was, and it was so beautiful too, because it was but I feel like sometimes with a Brett Bielema coach team, that style, at least not necessarily his team, but that style where it's a bit more conservative, a bit more methodical, a bit more plotting, sometimes that lends itself to playing not to lose and not necessarily playing to win. So getting this kind of play where this is clearly, yeah, you're going for the throw. You want to get this win. You don't respect Jack Tuttle. We're going to go out there, and it doesn't even matter if we don't get this because you're not going to score on us. Like, those are the kind of plays that help you ascend to a 6-1 season when, you know, underlying metrics or success rate are saying, hey, you're probably more like a 3 or 4 win team.
And this wasn't the typical offensive outburst we've been accustomed to this year. I mean, Luke Altmyer got loose for a few runs, but he didn't really spray the ball around the field as much as we've been accustomed to. And yet it still felt like we were in control of that game the entire way. I was a little nervous when it was 13-7, mm-hmm. that one touchdown and all of a sudden we're losing, because it felt like we were in control. And the turnovers along with that fake punt was enough for us to really get out in front. And then late third into the fourth quarter, it seemed like we went more into that conservative style where, I know you said you play to win, but I really think we were just looking, yep, at Jack Tuttle and daring him to beat us and relying on the defense and what had seemed to have been working that day. So I don't mind that strategy when you're sitting on a 2-touchdown lead, mm-hmm. and only 2 touchdowns because Donovan Leary as well on the 2-point conversion came in and threw a perfect pass to the back of the end zone. Zakari toe tapped it. And next thing you know, we're up a full 2 scores. And from that point forward, it's like, okay, let's just pound the rock. And it wasn't all that effective, but we did what we needed to do to come out of there victorious.
Mm-hmm. I think that style of play, like I said, it lends itself to being more conservative, but I like that Bielema at least has a sense of the moment that he can go to play for the win. Cause yeah, at that point, yes, you're more so than playing not to lose, because, you know, you understand that they've made all the mistakes and they're, you know, playing from such a deficit that if the only way you can let them back in a la Purdue is by, you know, having a touchdown on a broken, busted coverage play, and then the next play having a strip sack fumble recovered for a touchdown. Like, then that does get to more of like the conservative. If you're playing, you know, NCAA, then you turn everything onto the conservative mode so that you're not getting stripped and you're turning clock and all that. But I do like that at the time that it needed to be called, they went for it. But then, yeah, they understood the moment. They knew that. Yeah, that offense was the Michigan offense. It was hilarious because we were sitting kind of not bookended, but on like in front of us and behind us, we had Michigan fans, and the guys behind us were a little talkative and hearing how confident they were, which, I mean, makes sense. They just won a national championship. They're one of like the most winningest programs. Most winningest is totally a word phrase, by the way. But they're one of the best programs in the nation. Like, I get that there's a level of cocksure attitude that you get to have, but it was very funny, like, hearing them try to talk themselves into like this Michigan team being good in the first quarter and a half. And like, I literally was like laughing. There was a play where the Xavier Scott got burned and his man was wide open like 5-10 yards behind him, and it could have been not necessarily a touchdown because he had the recovery speed, but just like Jack Tuttle throwing an absolute duck at the dude's feet. It was just, it was, I couldn't not laugh. Like, I was almost happy that we were so willing to sell out against the run to stop them and make Jack Tuttle beat. It's like, yeah, okay, maybe they get a play here or there, but it's not going to work out in the balance because that dude is not a good quarterback.
There was an audible laugh around us of like the collective Illini fan base when Jack Tuttle threw one of those spikes into the ground on a wide open man 10 yards in front of him. And I don't know. I mean, we've dealt with that. We've had the quarterbacks that can't hit the open receiver, so we know what it's like, but it's got to be unfathomable as a Michigan fan coming off a championship, thinking, like, if you talk to these Michigan fans, I don't know, 8 months ago and said, oh yeah, next year you guys will be on your third string quarterback, not because of injuries, but because you can't find a quarterback that works, and Illinois will be 5-1 going into this game, they would have laughed in your face. And like, the fact that we won that game, I think, you know, just a short while ago was a crazy thought, but, you know, you and I both predicted it on the podcast, and many people predicted a win in that game because of the way things have shifted here in the last few months. And it's just crazy that we are the team now that, like, looking ahead to Oregon, we're metric-wise the hardest team left on their schedule, which is crazy. Like, they still have 5 games here, and I don't know how we're in this position, but here we are, 6-1, and I'm loving every second of it.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I think that was like the main theme that I'm sure everyone was thinking and feeling, but like, the only word I could come back to, I didn't know what to do with myself after the game. Like, I thought I was going to be on some brazen type stuff because I was like, oh, I'm going to do something ridiculous if we actually win this game. We just had that so handily, like, available to us to win the entire game. To your point, I never felt like there was really any kind of point where it was out of control. Yeah, the touchdown before half wasn't great, and then they got the ball to start the half. So it's like, oh, yeah, they could tie or, you know, take the lead. But there was never really a threat. And then to just like come back to the tailgate afterwards and be like, oh yeah, we're 6-1. Like, we're already bowling, which is now the biggest afterthought of all time, because we can talk about CFP implications if, you know, we either lose a close game to Oregon, somehow win. Then you're talking about being favored in your 4 final games and what that means and where the program's at. And like, I can't process all that. We went to school where it was like the worst time in revenue sports history. Like, I can't go from like the reference point being so low that then all of a sudden one season it turns all magical and I'm just like, oh yeah, this is the greatest thing of all time, because like, I should be thinking about like, yes, of course we had some like loftier predictions. This was your, you know, your hot take that we were going to win this game. I predicted 8 wins, but you know, some of that comes through the orange and blue tinted glasses that I'm sure we wear, even though we try to strip that as much as possible. But the fact that they're going out there and they're winning games like this, it's just, unbelievable. The way that Brett Bielema has this program rolling is something that it almost brings a tear to my eye, because of the fact that like, we dreamed about this. I just simply remember texting you when we were in college. It was junior year, and we were bemoaning the fact that like, just get us to 4 or 5 games or wins a year, and like, let's get a floor there, and then let's threaten for a bowl game. And then you start getting a couple high 3 stars, and then all of a sudden you start trying to think about 7 or 8 wins. And Brett Bielema was just like kicking down that door, and he's like, all right, I see that, and I'm gonna make 5 wins the floor, and I'm gonna get us to 8 wins in my third year, and I'm gonna, you know, get us to 6-1. And it's just like, oh wow, okay, well, this is crazy. It was his second year, because 21 was his first year. But regardless, within the past 2 of the past 3 seasons, it's just, I can't fathom that we're actually in this point where we're threatening as a program to become something, you know, past what any of our expectations would be.
Yeah, it's nice to just stop and smell the roses every now and again, especially when we're having a season like we're having. Again, as you said, we're bowl eligible, and I meant to put a tweet out there earlier, you know, the day after the game, and just saying, woke up feeling bowl eligible. But I was like, this is so much better than that.
Exactly.
I don't even want to say that, because our expectations are now even higher. And this Oregon game is like the icing of all icing on the cake type of game. Like, if you win this, it's the, I don't know, what is it? Buttercream? Maybe like cream cheese frosting? What's the icing of all icing?
I need your brain to fire. You came up with a stoplight last week. We need something this week.
Maybe I'm just not like even a nice. a nice chocolate buttercream frosting, homemade. That's what this game is, because if you win, this is like a rocket ship going to the moon. And if you lose, no one blinks or no one bats an eye. Mm-hmm. Like, you're expected to lose this game. You're expected to lose by a lot. You might as well just go out there and take a shot. Maybe this is that crazy college football year, or that crazy college football team that has no business being where they're at. And yet, you know, we turn around and we're in a college football playoff. So you never really know in college football. And I think this team has that kind of swagger to them and that belief. And Brett Bielema's pushing all the right buttons right now. So you never know.
I mean, to your point about how, you know, perfect the chocolate buttercream would be, like, it almost is like already materializing, because the fact that you got the 100 year one day commemoration win against a team that was played in that exact stadium for the original dedication, and you won so handily on a perfect day where you had the 2:30 kick, where you could tailgate in the AM, you could tailgate in the PM. It was just like, that's going to carry those vibes. Like, getting the win with those vibes is just going to, it might carry this fan base through for like the next, I don't want to say two seasons, but at least through the end of the year. Like, I have all confidence that we can get to 8 wins, not fairly easily, but that should be like the baseline expectation. But I'm going to be quite honest here. If we like only win one more game against like a Northwest, like, I'm still just going to be able to like close my eyes, think about the beautiful day that we had, where we were able to tailgate all day, watch Illini football just absolutely drub the defending national champions, where you had all eyes on you. And it's the nicest, warmest, fuzziest feeling. And if you can carry it now in the same vein, like, if you can carry that and you somehow do some wild stuff on Saturday, oh boy. And we're like preemptively building a statue for Bielema at that point.
Yeah, I guess to your point, that Michigan game was like the icing on the cake kind of game. So maybe this is, if we were to beat Oregon, it's like the bakery found an extra cake in the back that someone had ordered, but they had made an extra and they're just potentially giving it to you for free. So mm-hmm. that's what this game is in my mind. It's like, go out to Oregon. No one expects you to win. You get another national TV game. If you stay competitive, I think we'll all be happy. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you lose by 30 plus points and everyone's like, this is not the Illinois team we've been growing accustomed to. But at the end of the day, it would be a blip on the radar. And it's funny, you know, after that Michigan game, how quickly we forget what happened in that Purdue game. And we said it last week that you go take care of Michigan and people will completely gloss over that Purdue game. Maybe not if they get back to a committee that's reviewing it at the end of the year, which, fingers crossed, that's the case. Yeah. But the Oregon game is like, no one expects you to win it. So why not us? Why aren't we the America's team, the team wearing the leather helmets? That I honestly felt like 95% of the feedback seemed to be positive, but there was a vocal 5% that was saying these were the most heinous uniforms they'd ever seen.
I mean, yeah, I guess I could understand if you're just strictly watching on TV. Being there in person, it was a beautiful thing. Like, the guys looked so, like, for some reason, the way the uniforms laid, they looked so much bigger and more physical, and like, because it's darker, they just looked more terrorizing. And the leather helmets were sweet. I mean, you didn't get to see, obviously, the detail. Getting to see the detail in post in terms of like how cool those things looked, that was just, I shout out to everyone who made that happen.
The up close detail when you're on the field with the rest of the fan base after a big victory.
I love that. That's kind of like, I know, being a sibling of a Clemson alum, I know that that's like their thing, that after every home game, if they win, the Clemson students and fans will storm the field. I kind of love that the Illini are doing that, not because we're trying to copy Clemson, but just because like the circumstances for this season have provided such. It's like, whoever gets their underwear in a bunch, just like, calm down. It's a bunch of mainly 18 to 23 year olds celebrating people running into each other and throwing an egg-shaped object around. It's like, none of it makes sense. It doesn't matter. Why do you have to be the fun police about whether people are on the field or not after the fact? It's just, it's so silly to me that some people are just like, oh, the Illini are storming the field when they were the higher ranked team. It's like, oh, go go suck on a straw or something like that. I don't care about your opinion. We're just out here having fun.
Oh, suck on a straw. I don't think I've ever heard that one in my life.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think of stuff that's family friendly and and somewhat creative. And I'm honestly running. We're recording this on a Thursday night, and this week has been a lengthy one, so the brain isn't fine. But I guess it would be really inconvenient because you'd be sucking on a straw and getting absolutely nothing but air, and it would be the ultimate inconvenience because your body's used to getting some kind of liquid or whatever have you from a straw, and then you wouldn't get that. So maybe that's what we're going with. I'm going to shut up now.
Might have to start using that.
Just yelling that at the folks.
Oregon, Illinois. Yeah. This is a much different style matchup than I think we've seen this year. Because we had that Penn State game, and they're a very physical team. Even Michigan's a physical team. But this is the first time I think we see elite speed. And I don't know how we're going to handle it. It's not the type of football I guess we're accustomed to. What do you see in a different type of matchup against the Ducks?
Yeah, this is not your classic Big Ten West matchup. And it is going to present a lot of matchup issues. This is where, we saw some of that with Penn State in terms of some of the guys that they recruit just being simple freaks who can get to the flat in a blink of an eye, even if they're lining up 10 yards off the ball. These guys are not only going to be able to do that with, their perimeter players, but even on the interior. Like the way that Dan Lanning's coming in recruited with that SEC background, he's got some absolute hog mollies up front, but they're still so fast and violent that it's going to pose a lot of matchup problems. And I think the Nebraska/Penn State plan is obviously going to be back in effect. And to some degree, Michigan was as well. But I think there was a little bit more aggression in that game. Like you saw them taking a couple more chances. Even the fake punt is a bit of a risk that you might not take against this caliber of a team, because it's more of a, we need to, complete a couple short passes. We need to move the sticks two or three times. We need to put them back inside their five because, their offense is unbelievable. They have speed everywhere. You never root for injuries, but thankfully the tight end will hopefully be out for this game. So you're one man down who would definitely provide a matchup advantage for Oregon. Not that Matt Bailey hasn't acquitted himself nicely against some top tier tight ends, but it's just when you have so many considerations and so many athletes like Oregon has, it's just having that one less is going to be potentially something that you can lean on as an Illini defense. But yeah, to your point, it's team speed that just beat Ohio State, and Ohio State for conference realignment of the 2020s, Ohio State was really the only Big Ten team that recruited at an SEC level that had that speed at every single level of the field. On each side of the ball, everywhere you looked in that program, you're having that kind of speed. And Oregon always had it in the on the interior or on the exterior, but they never really had it in the interior. And now that you bring Dan Lanning, the SEC guy who has an eye for talent to understand how the trenches are built, he's getting those guys in there, and they are a force to be reckoned with, to the point where they took down Ohio State in their $20 million NIL budget this year. So it's going to be tough going to Eugene and that level of travel and, that atmosphere. It's going to be a tall task, but the thing that I love when you get this kind of point spread, you just instill a little bit of doubt early. You just get them thinking a little bit about, overlooking the Illini and thinking about, oh, this is, the 20th ranked team, but what's going on here? Why are we 25 point favorites? And maybe taking them a little less seriously. And you come out and you have a good first drive, you get some points, you get one stop, you get a fumble, you get something that makes them pause even just the slightest bit. And then that's when you start really playing with fire.
The other piece of the matchup that I guess is interesting to me, besides the speed versus, physicality, is we've been going, the bare front on defense with five linemen. And the way Oregon spreads us out or spreads teams out, I'm interested to see how we play it, whether or not we leave those five linemen in there and try to pressure the quarterback. Like last week, we were in the backfield as much as I've seen us this year. Gabe Akis, to his credit, he was seemingly back there the entire game. And then
whenever he wanted,
T.Y. Edwards got back there a few times, even Dennis Briggs and, Zeke Holmes, Seth Coleman were back there quite a bit. And I wonder, the way Oregon plays, they seem to get the ball out fast. Like Dillon Gabriel will spread the ball out and he'll do it in a hurry. Like he's not spending 3-4 seconds in the pocket. It's the ball's out quickly. So I wonder if we're going to change our scheme up this week, knowing that's the style of play we're going up against, or we're going to ride with our best 11 or what seems to be our best 11 and get all those five linemen in the game as much as we can.
Yeah. It's so tough because he's playing as well as almost that. If it wasn't, you know, Bo Nix 2.0 and people maybe had some fatigue on that, I feel like he'd be getting a lot more Heisman consideration, Dillon Gabriel, because yeah, the way that he's playing is just, you know, he had a couple bad red zone picks. I can't remember if that was the Purdue game or it was one of the Oregon games I was watching, but you know, he had like two straight red zone trips where he threw an interception. I was like, oh, wow, this isn't great, but he's cool. He's calmed it down. He's, you know, playing very well. It's one of those where they like to attack the edges and so many quick hitters. I was thinking about this actually at work when I was walking to and from the bathroom because I needed to think about something other than whatever task I was working on today. I was almost wondering, like, do you run that 5-1-5 and then just play press man and try and take away everything in that first to second level and have Miles Scott play as your center fielder, trying to take away anything deep, and then just dare them to, you know, hold on to the ball for, like you were saying, Dillon Gabriel's, he's 3-4 seconds in the pocket. He's either throwing it or he's running it. And you do a little mush rush, so maybe you don't get the pressure immediately, but then you get him if he starts to scramble a little bit, and then you have good tight coverage. But then they also have the playmakers that can probably get open if you give them more than just the 2 seconds. So it's probably smarter to sit back in, like, you know, a cover two shell or some kind of zone defense and you know, let them have almost those first two levels to a degree, and then just try and get them to kill you by 1,000 paper cuts, and then maybe you do what you did against Michigan. You get a couple fumbles that you cause, and then all of a sudden you're in business. But it's gonna be tough. This is, you know, Penn State was a great challenge because you know, that was the first, you know, they were undefeated and they were riding high, and then you saw the talent disparity. This is like not only a talent disparity, but also then like the coach. Dan Lanning is a great coach, and they're going to be absolutely firing on all cylinders. And it's just, you're going to need a little bit of that luck this year to get you across the finish line. But we've also proven that we've gotten lucky when we've needed it. So why not this week?
And to add on to that too, with Penn State and with Michigan, they have some top end talent, and they have talent across the board, but maybe not the depth that Oregon has. Oregon has, I think, 7 or 8 guys on offense that will probably be mid-round NFL 2025 picks. And when you have that much talent, it's maybe not that top end, you know, top 10 pick talent that we've seen with Abdul Carter at Penn State and we've seen with the guys at Michigan. But you're going to have guys that are playing on Sunday lined up from you this weekend, so it's a good opportunity too for Illinois players to try to get on scout radars, and maybe another big game from Gabe Backus. Next thing you know, he's working his way up the draft board. So it's a good opportunity, but it's going to be quite the test. And when you have that much talent you're going up against, you have to be executing at your highest level to stay in a game like that, or, you know, otherwise it's your hope is turnover battle and seeing if you can come out +2, +3 in a turnover battle and keep yourself in a game. But when it's Jimmy's and Joe's like that, it's really tough to match up.
I'm reminded of something in our first year doing this in 2020 that Mikey said when the Ohio State game was canceled, and how there's obviously any competitor is disappointed in that, but especially the guys who are looking to get on that NFL scout radar. And obviously they already are, you know, when you're getting national television coming to your venue, or you're playing on a Friday standalone game against Nebraska, of course people are going to be watching you. But these are the kind of things where, you know, the NFL scouts are looking at the two tackles, for example. And so this is, you know, Seth Coleman, if he puts on some good tape here while they're watching, while, you know, the 32, you know, sub scouts are watching their West Coast responsibilities, and they're looking at one of the two tackles and they say, hey, who's this number 9 from Illinois? That's when, you know, you can really get some extra juice to play up to the full potential and really get going, like Gabe did last week. Cause yeah, he definitely rose to the occasion there And hopefully you get it from everyone because they understand. I mean, of course they understand that they're playing number one, but looking at that as an opportunity rather than being scared of it. And, you know, almost it kind of the way that we've talked at the beginning of this is more of like, eh, it's house money, but it's not going to, you know, be anything if you come back with a loss. It's of course that attitude can be pervasive amongst the fans, but like as a player, seeing that as an opportunity to go out there and show that you're better than the best, I mean, that's got to be so tantalizing.
Looking ahead, player of the week, who do you like to match up against Oregon this week?
I mean, I kind of just gave it away because we just saw the pass rush really get home. So I'm going to have to go with Seth Coleman. I think this is the game where he gets right. And not that he, you know, didn't get right last week, but I feel like for his entire time as an Illini, it's been, he's got an NFL upside. He's got NFL upside and he does. I'm not disagreeing with that at all, but sometimes the production needs to match the talent. And in this case, you're going to have a lot of eyes on you. You go out there and you prove yourself against some surefire Sunday guys. And I'm hopeful that he'll rise to that occasion. So I'm going to go, two sacks with one forced fumble on that one of those sacks that gets recovered by the Illini.
Going big. You think Dylan Gabriel will be in the pocket long enough for him to get two sacks?
He's a small little boy. He's got tiny little hands. Maybe he can't hold up football.
Never know. I'm going to go on the defensive side of the ball as well. And I'm going to go with Xavier Scott. Last week.
He's due.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. When cornerbacks or defensive backs play well, you tend to forget about them because they're doing their job and they're not getting targeted as much. He's going to have his hands full this week. There's two wide receivers that I think are their clear one and two. It's Tez Johnson, who's a smaller receiver. And I imagine Torrey Cox probably gets that assignment, given that he's kind of the smaller corner we have, which means that someone like Xavier Scott, he's going to be roaming the field everywhere, I think. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him matched up for a bit on Evan Stewart, who is the 5-star Texas A&M transfer. He's had a couple big plays this year. He's kind of the deep threat, whereas Tez Johnson catches the ball near the line of scrimmage. He's got a much, I guess, smaller depth of target average this year. So Evan Stewart's the guy I think potentially Xavier Scott is matched up on, and they're going to have wide receivers running all around the field all game long, and stamina is going to be a factor as well. I wouldn't be surprised if we see, besides Caleb Patterson and Terrence Brooks, some other guys that maybe we haven't seen as much this year just to try to keep the defense fresh. And yeah, Xavier Scott's my guy. He's got to be all over the field because you know Oregon's offense will be, so he's got to be everywhere making plays, sticking his nose in there, doing his best Devin Witherspoon impression.
I love that. Put the two jitterbugs up against each other and then Xavier Scott out on an island against whoever they want to have at that traditional X spot. I think in the way that you just talked about Oregon's potential advantage with their wide receivers and how dynamic they are, I do want to give a little bit of credit to, and I mean, you saw it in the Michigan game, the fact that Sakari Franklin could just draw a flag at will because they were paying attention to Pat Bryant, but then Pat Bryant came through when needed. I mean, like we said, it was, what, 80 yards for the passing offense where Luke wasn't really distributing it too much, but you still had that effect from those elite-level wide receivers where, you know, they're getting that coverage that's drawing penalties, or they're getting that level of coverage that then allows for you to find a Hank Beatty open underneath. So that still being the strength, I kind of wanted to go with one of the two of them, but I feel like I've gone with Sakari once, and I feel like Pat Bryant is so chalky that I wanted to go with something a little bit more, a little less mainstream, I should say. But that's something where I feel like we've talked about this as well each week, and it's not just because, you know, early in the season, the interior line wasn't playing that well, and the running game hasn't quite gotten to where, you know, a Brett Bielema team you'd think it would be. You almost just got to keep yourself in it with the passing game. You just got to lean on your two big dogs. You got to lean on Zakari. You got to lean on Pat and hope that, you know, they can provide enough that then you're extending drive so that you're keeping your defense off the field and you're keeping the game as short as possible. And that's something that I feel like, for as much as, you know, Oregon has that talent on their offensive side, we're not that far behind, especially in the wide receiver room. So that's something where, you know, if we get some favorability coming out of, if we're looking at this on Sunday morning and wondering how did we go into number one at their place and beat them, it's because you're leaning on those two studs.
Do you want to go right into your prediction?
Yep. I'm going to go Oregon 34, Illinois 27.
It's pretty close.
Only because, yeah, I'll keep it. It's probably more of like a late touchdown at the end. So maybe I should go Oregon 34, Illinois 26, because I'm going to choose to believe Brett Bielema likes going for two when down eight and down 14 and getting a touchdown. So I'm going to say that our 2-point conversion luck reverts back to the coin flip from last week's Michigan game. So I think that there are points to be had only because of the fact that you can get backed into a corner a little bit if Oregon really starts pressing. And I think that that actually allows for the Illini offense to do a little bit more dynamically. But I don't think it's going to be necessarily close. Like I said, I think it's going to be more of like a, you know, 35-14 game, and maybe you get a couple late scores. But it's one where I want to believe, but I just can't bring myself to necessarily get over that hump. And I don't want to necessarily just be the homer that just keeps riding them. But maybe I'm wrong. I'm curious to hear what your prediction will be.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, knowing Brett Bielema, he tends to play teams close in his, you know, last couple seasons in Illinois. The only game I can think that really wasn't all that close was, well, Kansas, we kind of backdoored it to make it look good when we played at Kansas. And then the Purdue game last year kind of was out of hand. But other than that, most of the big games our teams have gotten up for and have played pretty well. So I kind of like Illinois to cover in this game, which last I saw a line was 22, I think.
I think it got up to 25 at one point.
Yeah, so it's a lot of points, and the fact that Illinois is historically under Brett Bielema played teams pretty close in big games, I like that trend to continue. However, the talent discrepancy is big, and I don't know, we're coming off that emotional win, and they kind of just took care of business with Purdue last week, and it's like business as usual for them. So I kind of see it a little bit of a letdown, but I'll say we still cover. So I'll say, give me 38-20 Oregon. And yeah, I mean, it could be, interestingly enough, a potentially a rainy game. I was looking at the radar today, and it looks like it'll probably hold off until Saturday evening. But if it's a rain game, things get interesting. It might neutralize their speed a little bit. And we might be able to play the kind of game to suit our style. Maybe get the barge package back out, because I doubt Oregon's seen stuff like that in the Pac-12. Nope. And especially this year, they haven't seen all that much smash mouth football. So I don't know. I think we can hang in there. I think we'll keep it close for the most part. And I think ultimately their talent outweighs ours. And as we saw against Penn State, like, we're metric wise, not as good of a team as our number 20 ranking would suggest. And I think it catches up to us this week. So I will take Oregon and no buttercream frosting for me.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, the Penn State game probably, I mean, I'm glad that we covered for all the Illini backers in the desert, and also the folks who could get money down on it who are Illini alum. But James Franklin did everything in his power to keep us in that game. And I just don't think Dan Lanning is that much of a pud. So I can see a world pretty easily in which they cover that spread. But to your point, Ben, I have full confidence and faith in Brett Bielema being able to just, you know, keep the game a little bit more of a, you know, a slog and making it, you know, the time of possession battle. And yeah, hopefully, I mean, I'm hoping for some rain, because that would be wonderful. Cause that's an equalizer for a team that relies on passing and speed as much as Oregon does.
Hey, and if you're not Luke Altmaier, go ahead and turn this off. But if you're Luke Altmaier, hey, bud, this is your chance. This is Heisman week right here. You go up and put up four touchdowns against Oregon.
I love it.
You're on the radars. You're all of a sudden at 19 touchdowns to one interception. Everyone knows your name.
go have a day.
Have a day. And don't forget to run the ball a little bit. You look pretty good out there when you're running the ball.
Yep. Yep. I mean, that was some of his best work in the Michigan game was him just relying on his legs. And I wouldn't hate, I mean, hey, you throw for 160 yards and a touchdown, but you go out there and you run for a buck 20 and a couple touchdowns, and Lukey Heisman's going to be, the praises will be sung.
Hey, and Luke, lean back in here for a second. Nobody thinks you're going to win this game, just so you know. Like, you already have lost the game in the minds of America, so you might as well just go out there and dance around, do whatever you want to do, because no one's expecting you to win. All right, you can go back over to the sideline.
Yeah, everyone's back. Don't worry about those last couple minutes. We were just doing a thing. But, yeah, it would be great to get the win. And I know that, you know, it would certainly open even more eyes in the national media. And then we can really talk reckless. We could be talking about a guaranteed college football playoff berth. And but either way, I mean, we still can. But this would just be wonderful.
I'm also just... I assume we're wearing white unis on the road, but I'm just picturing their neon and our like orange, just all time ugly uniform combo on the field. Yuck. Just bright neon colors flying around, making plays.
What would be the grossest matchup if we wore the leather helmets with orange pants and a white
color rush shirt? Except for the leather helmets. And then they go with their neon greens.
Oh my God.
Just that looking like Ireland flying around on the field.
That would be amazing, but it would also be so disgusting. I almost need it to happen.
We'll put a cap on our Oregon preview. 2:30 CBS crews back. They don't even have to do much research this week. Just they've had Oregon against Ohio State a couple weeks ago, and now they have Illinois against Oregon after having Illinois against Michigan last week. So, you know, Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson know these rosters front to back. So it should be another good broadcast. 2:30. I doubt there's nearly as many people that have made the trip out to Eugene this week. And there's not a lot of stadium seating in that Outzen Stadium. I think it's one of the smaller venues around the country. So
it's like $55,000.
We don't need Brett Bielema getting another crowd controversy about fan bases this week, but I don't think it's the most hostile environment we've been in, although anytime you go to number one, it's going to be a battle. They'll be geared up. Yeah. So we'll be on it. I'm actually going to a wedding this weekend, so I think the wedding's in North Carolina, the ceremony's Eastern time, so it's like a, I don't know, 4 or 5 p.m. ceremony, so I probably won't even be watching it live.
Dan's got the phone in his lap while the ceremony's going on, just not even a care in the world.
I'm going to be sitting in the back row with just
a
phone kind of half out of my pocket.
I mean, your fiance is in the wedding, so you don't have to worry. Like, you're not doing anything. She's not going to be by you. She doesn't have to see.
Do you think the play is that you get one of those, booklets and you kind of open it up and you rest the phone inside that, so it looks like you're actually just reading,
Yeah, I'm just reading all these names. Wow, those
bridal party is.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Cassandra is such a beautiful name. I can't believe her sister. Well, I'm just going to think about all the ways. And then you start throwing the booklet around because Illinois scored a big touchdown. They're up 14-0 on the number one team in the nation. All eyes on Dan.
Does anyone object? No. No. Come on.
No, 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 no. The amount of times that when we were at the stadium and the amount of times I was just yelling no or yes, and our significant others were wedged between us, and I was just getting copied by them. It was very funny. So maybe we can get, you'll have to channel some of my no.
I just hope they give us a game to watch. Give us a game to watch. I want to be tuned into the game. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be fully locked in on the wedding, but if we're down 3 scores at half, I'll definitely be fully locked in on the wedding. So I'll do my part. And John, you do your part, and Illini Nation, you do your part, which is being online during the games. And let's have another Saturday.
Let's do it.
Thank you for listening to this episode. As always, we appreciate it. Go Illini.